Good morning. We are going to look at disqualification and repudiation of the beneficiaries in intestate succession, but it also applies to testate. Okay. So the first thing is just to remind you that intestate succession is regarding a person who has passed away and has not left a will, or has not left a will that is valid. Their estate will then be devolved in accordance to the rules of intestate succession. So when we look at disqualification and repudiation, in terms of sections 1.7 of the Intestate Succession Act, if a person is disqualified from being an intestate heir or of the deceased, or repudiates or renounces an inheritance, the benefit which that heir would have received devolves as if the heir had died immediately before the deceased died, and as if the heir had not been disqualified from inheriting or had not repudiated the inheritance. So what this basically means is that the heir is deemed to have predeceased the deceased. If the disqualified or repudiating heir has descendants of their own, those descendants will inherit the benefit by representation. The inheritance which the disqualified heir would have inherited. So if the disqualified or repudiating heir has no descendants, then the share which he or she would have received would go to the other heirs of the deceased estate in accordance with the normal principles or rules of intestate succession. So I want to bring to your attention something quite important that is a bit of an exception to the rule, is when a heir decides to repudiate an inheritance, one has to apply sections 1.7 in conjunction with section 1.6 of the Intestate Succession Act. And the reason for that is that they are subject to each other. What this means, though, is that if an intestate heir of the deceased repudiates an inheritance and the deceased is survived by a surviving spouse, the surviving spouse will inherit the repudiating heir's share. If the deceased is not survived by a surviving spouse, then the repudiating heir will be deemed to have predeceased the deceased, and his or her descendants will inherit through representation per stirps. So in the latter scenario, where the repudiating heir is seen as predeceased and the descendants inherit by representation, it should turn out that the repudiating heir has no descendants. The inheritance will pass to the intestate heirs of the deceased according to the normal rules of intestate succession. This will not apply, in terms of sections 1.6, sorry, this will not apply to a person who is disqualified from inheriting. We'll go through disqualification shortly. So examples of repudiation. I'm going to attach the diagram to this so that you can actually have a look at the diagram. It's just a little workflow mind map. So in May 2007, John and William entered into a civil union marriage in terms of the Civil Union Act, subject to the accrual system. So they were married out of community of property, but with accrual. In January 2008, John dies intestate and leaves the following relatives. One is William, who is his spouse, civil union spouse, who is entitled to the accrual. And in this case, the accrual was 100,000 rand. Samuel and Dina are the adopted children of John and William. So when the estate is liquidated, Dina, who's one of the adopted children, decides that she wants to repudiate her share of the inheritance. So she refuses to inherit any part of John, who's her deceased father's estate. Now France, who is a grandson of John, Now, France is the son of John's predeceased son, Gerald, who was born from John's first marriage to Karen. I mean, Kathy, sorry. So Kathy is his ex-wife. They had a child named Gerald. Gerald is predeceased, but Gerald has a son named France. Mary is John's mother, and Ben is John's brother. So if we look at the devolving of the estate, so the total value of John's estate in this instance is 1.2 million. And his estate will be devolved as follows. So William is entitled to 100,000 rand accrual in terms of their Matrimonial Property Act. So the 100,000 rand is then minused or subtracted from John's estate. So 1.2 million less the 100,000 gives you 1.1 million. What this means is that the total value of John's estate is then to be divided in terms of intestate succession rules. So we have 1.1 million that needs to be divided amongst all the living descendants, and if there is a living spouse, the child's portion needs to be calculated. So William, even though he's a man, he is legally the spouse of John through the Civil Union Act, is entitled through intestate succession, the rules of intestate, he is entitled to inherit the child's portion of all 250,000 rand, whichever amount is greater. So if we take the 1.1 million, we divide it between the three children, which would be Gerald, the predeceased son of John and his wife Kathy, and then John's adopted children is Samuel and Dina. Okay, and then we have to add William in there. So it's four children. So 1.1 million divided by four gives you 275,000 rand. This value is greater than the 250,000 rand stipulated in legislation. So therefore, William, the spouse, inherits 275,000 rand of the child's portion. If we deduct 275,000 rand from the 1.1 million, we are left with 825,000 rand, which has to be divided equally amongst the children. So we have Samuel, Dina, and Gerald. Now, Gerald is predeceased, so his share will go to his descendant, who is William, through representation. Samuel and Dina should get a split of equal shares, each getting 275,000 rand. However, Dina has repudiated or renounced her share. So her share of 275,000 rand will go to the spouse who is alive, William, in terms of sections 1.6 of the Intestate Succession Act, which provides that if a descendant refuses to inherit, his or her share will go to the surviving spouse. Mary, John's mother, and Ben, John's brother, will receive nothing in terms of intestate succession. Okay. If we look at disqualifying beneficiaries, so persons who are disqualified from inheriting, in terms of the common law, a person may not benefit by his or her own wrongdoing. And accordingly, there are a number of categories of persons who, on account of their actions, are precluded from inheriting. So if we look at a few of these people or classes, categories, sorry, beneficiaries who have caused the death of the deceased, or what we call a co-intisimi of the deceased, a beneficiary who is responsible for the death of the deceased, or the co-intisimi of the deceased, is precluded from inheriting either testate or intestate from the deceased estate. So a definition is of a co-intisimi persona or a co-intisimi is a person closest to the deceased, namely the surviving spouse, parent, or child. So any person who causes the death of the deceased or a person closest to the deceased, such as a spouse, a child, or a parent, is precluded from inheriting. So, according to common law, even a beneficiary who gives assistance or counsel to a killer is disqualified from inheriting. The rule precluding a killer from inheriting finds application in our Roman Dutch law maxim, which states, Die bloedige hand neemt geen erf, literally meaning, the bloody hand takes no inheritance. So the operation of this maxim, bloedige hand maxim, is absolute. It does not matter whether the deceased was killed intentionally or negligently. A beneficiary who commits culpable homicide, which is the unlawful and negligent killing of a human being, is as equally disqualified from inheriting as a person who commits murder, which is the unlawful and intentional killing of a human being. It would seem that the courts are reluctant to relax the operation of this maxim without any legislative intervention. So, someone who is responsible for the death of the deceased or a co-inctimate of the deceased will not automatically be disqualified from inheriting, and the master does not have the authority to disqualify him or her. An order of the court is required in this regard. If we look at the next category of person, we look at the indignus. An indignus is a word for an unworthy person. What is an unworthy person? A person who unlawfully causes the death of the deceased or the coenctissimi of the deceased is automatically considered an indignus, a person who is unworthy or lacking in merit. The term indignus is, however, not limited solely to killing. It also applies to all types of conduct perpetrated against the deceased, which would be viewed as despicable according to prevailing notions of public policy. And this was illustrated best in the court case Taylor versus Pym, which I'm not going to go through at this point in time. The next person that is disqualified from inheriting is the persons involved in the execution process. A beneficiary may not benefit from a will if he or she was involved in the execution of that will in terms of sections 4.A of the Wills Act. Sections 4.A(1) provides that any person who signs a will as a witness or as an amanuensis or anyone who writes out the will or any part thereof in his own handwriting, and the person who is the spouse of such a person at the time of the execution of the will, shall be qualified from receiving any benefit from that will. Sections 4.A(3) further provides that the nomination of a will, that the nomination in a will of a person as an executor, trustee or guardian shall be regarded as a benefit to be received by such person from that will, and therefore sections 4A(1) and 2 also apply to these persons. If a beneficiary is disqualified in terms of sections 4A(1) of the Wills Act, he or she may yet be capable of inheriting, provided the requirements in sections 4A(2) are present. The central provision in section 4A(2) is contained in subsection B. And where a beneficiary is disqualified for any of the reasons mentioned in sections 4.A(1), it is important to decide whether or not the disqualified beneficiary would have been an intestate heir of the testator or the testator died intestate. If the disqualified beneficiary would have been an intestate heir and the share which he would have been received in terms of the will is equal or less than what he or she would have received had the testator died intestate, the disqualification will be lifted and the beneficiary will inherit in terms of the will, and there will be no need to apply either paragraph A, B, A, C, or of section 4A(2). If we look at the consequences of disqualification, under common law, when a beneficiary was disqualified for whatever reason, his or her progeny ad infinitum were disqualified from inheriting. However, this common law position was ameliorated by a legislature as it was deemed unfair to visit the sins of the father on the children. And sections 2C of the Wills Act and sections 1.7 of the Intestate Act, Succession Act, contain similar provisions in this regard. These sections provide for substitution ex lege and are discussed, and we will discuss it later. And that's basically the reasons. I just want to go through the last section here quickly. If a beneficiary is disqualified because he or she witnessed a will, sections 482C of the Wills Act permits the disqualification to be disregarded if there are at least two competent witnesses who do not stand to inherit. Ordinarily, only two competent witnesses attest and sign a will. Sections 4.82C is to apply here. There would have been one or more superfluous witnesses who participated in the execution of the will and who do not stand to inherit. In this case, the master can make a determination in terms of the section. And that basically is disqualification and repudiation of the benefits to